little juice.
I feel like a duck-billed platypus.
Ow!
Dude, check out the knots.
It's the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Let's go, Tybalt! Great adventures await!
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Year of the Weasel. For those who are just joining us, this is probably not the episode to watch because it's sort of like I think I'm going to call this episode 3.5. So if you're just joining us, go back and watch the first three episodes because you're not going to get much out of this. But I will tell you, here's what Year of the Weasel is. Zach. And this is Callie.
We're really bad at introducing ourselves. If you're not familiar with us at this point,
exactly.
This is the wrong episode.
Yeah, if you want to know who we are, go back to episode one. I'm tired of going through this every time. So we're watching all of the, I don't know about every Pauly Shore movie, but it might be every Pauly Shore movie at this point. I don't know. Because we're having
watching
fun.
As much Pauly Shore stuff that we can handle.
As we can tolerate.
In
a year long, this is another classic dystopian dance party endurance test. But we're freaks, so we're actually having fun.
Yeah, we're really enjoying this Pauly Shore one.
So yeah, we've done three episodes already. One on early roles. One on his MTV show, Totally Pauly, and the sort of like, and the comedy specials that he did in the early 90s. And we just, the one 2 weeks ago was Encino Man and Class Act. I said that the next one was going to be Son-in-Law, but we decided we still had some other stuff to say. And then there's some, there's some correspondence that I want to catch up on and all of that. So this is going to be a little bit of a mini episode where we talk about some of the things surrounding Encino Man, and then we'll be back in a couple of weeks with Son-in-Law. So to start, I do have some listener comments. One is all the way back from episode one from our pal Humongous. If you've listened to us before, you know that we've talked about him before. We have like three regular listeners that we're all on, that we all know by name. So we've heard from Marty White, and we're going to hear from him again. And now we're going to hear from, and now we're hearing from Humongous. So Humongous said, finally getting around to seeing this. I've been looking forward to it. And then he says, hey, are you going to watch Phantom of the Mall? Classic. And I will say, sort of, we sort of watched Phantom of, I mean, presumably you watched the episode, so you know, we sort of watched Phantom of the Mall. But that was by that point, like I explained on the episode, by that point, I was just kind of rushing to get through all of these fucking movies. So I pretty much scrubbed through it until Pauly showed up.
Yeah, I didn't watch it at all. Not even Pauly's ass can get me to watch that movie. I've seen it. There are plenty of other opportunities to see it, so I didn't.
I know, there's been two other times. I'm sorry, spoiler alert, it's also in Son-in-Law. So there's been two times that we've talked about so far, and there's going to be a third. So we're at one Pauly Shore ass shot per episode, almost. We're very nearly at a one-to-one. It wasn't an Encino Man because I guess that they were aiming for a PG rating, but I am interested in seeing the full movie now that I've seen the part where Pauly Shore's ass appears. So I appreciate the recommendation. Well, maybe I'll check it out. Now, here's a comment. I've been meaning to shout them out for a while. This is actually another podcast. They're called Can I Pod with Madness? And I checked them out a while back because we've kind of like commented on each other's stuff on Instagram. And it's a really fun show. So they're a couple. I don't know if they're married. I don't know what their legal status is. But I think of them as a as a married couple. And that's one of my favorite genres of podcasts. I just think that's usually a fun dynamic. And I also, I love a podcast that's not just dudes. So that's always cool. They're English and they go through old Kerrang magazines from the 80s, sort of. They might go through it. Like, honestly, cool. A lot of the time, another thing I appreciate about them is that they get off topic a lot. And I hate a podcast that stays on topic. Radiolab can get fucked. Like, where's the...
Yeah, I always prefer tangents, which I know a lot of people don't and complain about. And I feel like there's two kinds of people. And there's the people who like laughter and tangents in a podcast. And there are the people who don't. And we always get hate for going on tangents and laughing at our own jokes. And it's a matter of preference. Like,
yeah, this is what I look for. Like, Ira Glass, go fuck yourself. I don't want to hear that shit. I want crosstalk. I want laughing. And I want completely unrelated. And I want the fucking thing to come in at 90 minutes minimum. That's my...
Yeah.
But now I make it sound like it's a terrible... Like, I like it because it's shit. But no, I like their whole vibe. They're very funny. I like their dynamic. And we have a lot of interest in comment. And so they did comment on one of our Instagram posts. And this was when we were talking about asking you to share your Pauly Shore sex stories. Which is still, by the way, still an open call. We haven't received any yet. So our door is still wide open. But this is the closest to a response we've received. Oh, and I should also set this up that in the same episode, we talked about the spring break 93 chilling with the Wheeze, where John Lovitz came on to promote North.
It's so funny that we're talking about John Lovitz because I have been, so worst idea of all time. I think I talked about this in another one. They've been re-releasing their first season where they watched Grown-Ups 2 52 times. And John Lovitz is in that and he's like a highlight in the movie for them. And so I hear that all the time. And then the other night I saw that Grown-Ups 2 was free on Amazon. So it was like 3 a.m. I'm still jet lagged from Japan. So I like have a really stupid sleep schedule. So I was just up super late watching Grown-Ups 2. And I watched the John Lovitz part, obviously. And so it's just like whenever, like that's my association with John Lovitz.
Right, right.
That and just like being bitchy at Pauly Shore. Right.
And eventually getting in a slap fight with him. So all of his preamble was to say, again, you've been warned, we like tangents. All of his preamble was to say that this comment by Can I Pop with Madness, they said, we've never had sex with Pauly Shore. Sorry. First of all, I accept your apology. but do better. However, we met Elijah Wood and told him we were fans of North and that we had to get a weird Chinese version of the DVD because it's not available anywhere else. And you could tell that motherfucker does not want to talk about North. So I appreciate your apology for not having sex with Pauly Shore. And I also appreciate the awkward encounter with Elijah Wood. So yeah, thank you. And I can wholeheartedly recommend Can I Pop with Madness? It's a fun time. And then one more from our other friend, Marty White. He said, this is for the Encino Man podcast. He said, I was shocked about two things. One, Sean Astin was in the film. And two, he had a post-Goonies career. I'm 3 years younger than Astin and saw Goonies in the theater and a million times in the decades since. While I've seen many of his movies, I never recognized him and thought he didn't do much else besides Goonies and Stranger Things. But as much as Mikey was the hero in Goonies, I guess he was an obnoxious little pug in that film too. That is true. I will say, this is not immediately connected to Encino Man, and this is further making it sound like I have a personal vendetta against Sean Astin, which I swear I do not. But, you know, like every person who was a kid in the 80s, I, of course, liked the Goonies, and I didn't see it for years and years. And I saw it again in one of my first years of college. There, I went to University of Michigan, and at the Michigan Theater, they did midnight screenings. And I saw a bunch of those my first year, I think it was, of college. That was when I saw Scarface for the first time, which that was a fucking wild midnight screening. I saw Donnie Darko, and they put the first reel on. They put it on backwards, so the whole first reel of the movie was upside down and backwards, which honestly... arguably an improvement over the the correct orientation of watching Donnie Darko. And I saw The Goonies, and that was my first time seeing The Goonies in, you know, 15 years maybe. And I was like, oh my God, will these kids shut the fuck up? Like, they're just like constantly yelling.
I didn't see The Goonies until I was a teenager. So I don't have that like association with The Goonies that I feel like you kind of need to have in order to enjoy it.
Yeah, you kind of
like,
have to see it
but,
before you reach puberty to really get it, I think, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I love Corey Feldman and his Purple Rain poster. And, you know, obviously, Josh, the older brother, Thanos.
Oh, yes, Brolin.
Josh Brolin. Yeah, Josh
is
Brolin.
Okay?
He has that iconic.
I kept trying to say, the reason it took me so long to say is because I kept trying to say Groban. And I'm like, that's not it.
I know. I was going through every fucking Josh in my mind. It was like Josh Groban. I could not get there. But yeah, Josh Brolin has his iconic, you know, sleeveless tank and headband. You know, I'm very pro Goonies, but the kids are too loud.
I like exclusively think of Sean Astin as Sam Gamgee, even though I don't particularly like Lord of the Rings. It was just like that was what was coming out when I was probably like Goonie age for like most people. It was like the Lord
That's
of the Rings.
That's true.
Was
yeah.
Out.
What was the first one? Was like 99, right? So yeah.
And I feel like that would have probably been the first thing I saw Sean Astin in, because then I later went back and watched The Goonies and also Encino Man. So
yeah, because
like,
you're not at age 7 or whatever. You're not or less than that. You're not gonna watch Rudy, you know? Like that's
yeah.
I still don't think I've watched all. Like it's probably been on TV or something. But I probably mostly associate Sean Astin with Encino Man because I think that was the first. I think I might have seen The Goonies before I saw Encino Man, but I'm a little bit younger. So I feel like Encino Man might have actually been the first time I saw Sean Astin.
That's funny.
So thank you, everyone, for writing in. It is a little. This is the most episodes of anything we've done on a set schedule. And one of the reasons why is because we've been recording them in advance. And so in 2 weeks, it's going to be fun because my beard is going to be back in 2 weeks, but it's probably not going to be back in real life. Yeah, so I've been a little like, we kind of like, we let the feedback pile up a little bit. So if there's a lag, if you say something and I don't respond for several weeks, it's because I'm saving it for the next show. That's why
we need more people to comment on our stuff to
get
more
angry
an
people.
Actual mailbag.
Yeah, I miss the days.
When you're getting flooded with hate messages.
When everybody hated us. We still get. I mean, we have been getting a few like old comments in old videos, which could be interesting to do at some point. They're not Pauly Shore related, but like. Did you know some of our Kiss videos have like 10,000 views? On
Jesus
YouTube?
Christ, no.
Now, to be fair, it's almost been 10 years. So it's not like, you know, some people, I realize that YouTube numbers, this is not impressive. And some people will like post, a lot of people will post a video and it gets 10,000 views overnight. But that's a lot for us. So somebody asked if you ever did your 85 Motley Crue look. So we can answer that here. We can answer it live.
Remember
when you were doing the makeup videos? Yeah.
Yes, I did. I think they are still on my YouTube. They're kind of annoying. Like, I kind of want to redo them because I don't like them. But I did. I did Vince Neil. I did all four. But the best one, I think, was Vince Neil. Because
right.
That was the
okay.
one that I made me want to do it, just because his makeup look in Spoken in the Boys Room is so stupid. But I was like, all right, no, this is what I have to do. And then the other ones are kind of the same. Like, if you Vince Neil is the only one that's different. Like, I literally use the same wig for everybody else. So
that's the beauty of Motley Crue. You can cosplay as all four members with only two wigs. You just need a black wig and a blonde wig.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's the response. This is not that they're probably not watching this video. They left this on the Motley Crue.
Yeah, if you want the response to your question about Motley Crue, just seek out a mini episode on Pauly Shore.
I'm not gonna make this easy for you.
I mean, they could also just find my page, and I don't know.
That's true. That's true. Exactly.
But honestly, I don't really want people to watch. Like, I put it back on there, but I don't need y'all to watch it. It's fine. Oh, I also did Stephen Piercy from Rat. That was a good one.
Well, then that's perfect. So this is the only way. I'm not going to respond to the comment. The only way I'm going to reply to that is in this completely unrelated video. And then if they really want it, they can find
it. Well, what you can do is just link, like comment on it, but link this video. And so then they have to watch this video. And then we get more views.
And when we get a view and we get one step closer to 10,000 views for Pauly Shore. all right. I've also, in addition to the listener comments, I've also got some corrections here. The first one is I feel a little ashamed of because we spent kind of a lot of time in our second episode talking about how we didn't get the difference between Totally Pauly and Totally Different Pauly. Pauly fucking explained the difference between the two of them. We just didn't watch the video. So, mea culpa.
I was going to say, I still don't know what the difference is. So
we've been drinking from this fire hose of content that is Totally Pauly Fan on YouTube. Another shout out to them. but we've been doing it in a very haphazard way. And I just randomly came across the first episode of Totally Different Pauly. So here's what happened. So Totally Pauly ran for like 2 years and it came to an end on June 26th, 1992. That was the last episode. And I'll put some of the episode. It actually ends on a weirdly somber note where Pauly is like sitting outside of the Comedy Store and he reads a poem and like talks about how thankful he was for having this opportunity. And it's also, it's like a month after Sam Kinison died. So he kind of like gets emotional and tears up.
My show originally was supposed to be just 3 months. No one thought it would last this long. 2 years later, I'm still around. Because of you guys, I never made people frown. I'll never forget the MTV channel. There's one who made me. You're the ones who made me. What I am today. And I'll never forget my friend Sam Kinison, who just passed away. Thank you guys. And I'm not gonna be gone forever and stuff, and I'll still see you guys.
Surprisingly, it's like not what you expect from Totally Pauly.
Totally Pauly.
Yeah, right, yeah, not at all. And then several months later, in October of 92, that's the first episode of Totally Different Pauly. And it's really interesting because he starts by talking about that last episode. And he says, you know,
I don't know if you guys remember this, but this was my last time when I was on MTV about 5 months ago. I haven't been on MTV for that long.
Thank you, guys.
And I was pretty emotional because I really honestly swear I didn't think I was coming back. And I'll tell you why I came back and how it's going to be different, okay? So that's why this show is called Totally Different Pauly. And I'm not going to be as obnoxious. You know, I know a lot of pissed you a lot of people off, and a lot of the people out there don't like the what and stuff. Well, it's not going to be like that anymore, okay?
So basically, Totally Different Pauly, he was trying to rebrand and be less obnoxious. That's literally the words that he used. He also said something about he promised MTV that he was going to stop using his show to meet chicks, which I don't know if that happened. I feel like he was definitely still flirting with a lot of ladies.
I wonder how much of that is still in character, because I know that he often would do this bit where like people would ask him like, what's the difference between the Encino Man character and the Weasel, or like, what's the difference between Pauly and the Weasel? And he would be like, oh, there's a lot of differences. And then he would give these like non-differences, and that was the joke. So I wonder if it's in that line. I honestly, I have trouble sometimes figuring out what is supposed to be funny and not just in Totally Polly, but in life.
So the mark like, of a I'm great comedian.
but also, like, part of it is that, and then part of it is, I think, just me that I have trouble. I won't get into actual real life examples, but specifically in Totally Polly, I rewatched, and this is a correction on my part too, but I don't know if it's a correction because I still am confused about what was going on. But in that episode that I was talking about the scuba diving thing, and then he meets that person, he's talking to them, and then they say they have cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
I still can't tell if that was a joke or not, and I feel really bad about it.
I think she was telling the truth.
That's what I thought at first, and then I thought it was, like, awkward because of that.
Right.
But now I can't tell if it was just, like, a very, like, off-color joke where she was trying to say that to get Polly to leave her alone so that she doesn't have to go scuba diving with her. Like, I cannot figure it out. And I feel really stupid. It's possible. So, like,
yeah,
so.
But she says something like, the doctor said I wasn't going to be able to walk or something like that.
I feel bad. I feel bad for laughing. And to be clear, I'm not laughing because she may or may not have cerebral palsy.
Right, right.
I'm laughing
right.
because in any situation, it's just like so weird that they would keep that in the show. Like whether or not it's intentional or not, it's still just like weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It is very weird. So the mystery is solved. Totally Different Polly is just supposed to be like a toned down version. Because I think basically
but
there was so
not,
much discourse.
Though, right?
It's not it? Really. I mean, he does a little.
See, that's why I'm confused about the humor. It's like, am I just an idiot? Am I just an idiot and that's why Polly Shore works for me?
Right, maybe. Maybe because they even says.
I mean, there's some people out there that like me. They're usually like 4 years old with rattlers, you know. Hey, buddy, buddy, major, you know.
And I'm like, so I guess we're just the lowest common denominator. But yeah, I mean, I guess he's kind of more being himself, but he still dresses like the weasel. There's a little less of the like major kind of, you know, like he's not doing that as much.
But, I don't know. I still stand by my confusion over what the difference is.
And I mean, honestly, I think it was probably partly MTV driven. They were probably like, look, we're going to give you this show back, but you have to start alienating the grownups. So, I mean, there's your answer. I still feel like they're functionally the same show.
Yeah, which I think was the point. I don't know. I just know that part of Pauly Shore's whole thing is exposing differences that are non-differences. So,
right.
like, that's...
Right.
And I think that might be part of the joke, but I'm not sure anymore because I don't know what's a joke and what's not, apparently. I just laugh at whatever.
Here's an important correction. I addressed this in the, but I feel it's important to give it some airtime because I feel a little bad about it. In our second episode, we talked about, this is where the origin of the Send Us Your Pauly Shore sex story is. We talked about a Reddit post where, you know, somebody was like, who's the grossest person you would have sex with? And one person said Pauly Shore. And then this other lady who I did leave her name out because, you know, I just figured let's not put this, even if it's a Reddit name, let's just not put this person on blast. But this person said, I've got stories and, you know, kind of shared this bizarre tale of her going back to his hotel room and him taking a bubble bath in her presence. And when I said that story and ran through it, the way I phrased it was somebody said the grossest person I would have sex with is Pauly Shore. And how I said it was, and then this person said, I did have sex with Pauly Shore. That's not what they said. That was not what they were saying took place. I will also say one of the reasons why I said that and didn't think it was a big deal is because there's absolutely no, you know, there's no judgment for me if you had sex with Pauly Shore or not. If anything, like the Can I Pod with Madness comment, I think you should apologize for not having sex with Pauly Shore. But I do understand that like that's not what the story was saying, and I just want to make it clear I was telling the story in a poor way. This person did not have sex with Pauly Shore. But if you have, again, or if he's just taking a bubble bath in front of you, whatever. like any, honestly, any weird interaction you've had with Pauly Shore, whether it constitutes sexual intercourse or not, our door is open. But this is a judgment-free zone. You can tell us anything.
And it will be anonymous.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you want to
leave in any, we won't leave in any identifying details unless you want us to. And that's our commitment to you.
So if someone sends these in, because I don't even remember asking for these, if someone sends these in, are we going to then read them on the podcast? Is that what the?
I don't know. I'm not sure. If you want us to, we will. Or otherwise, we'll just read them and file them away. And we'll just, this is just, we're going to become this can help you process. It's like therapy.
Yeah.
One last, I guess there's actually two things. One is I'm going to resolve this. We'll put this on our Instagram. But when we talked about Encino Man and Class Act, it was several weeks after we'd watched the movies. And so there are two outfits in Class Act. He wears the one where he invites them to the rally, and then he wears a slightly different one when he's at the rally.
Wait a second. Really? I didn't even catch that.
I mean, it might just be that he put on a jacket.
I think it might be.
It's not worth going into now. This is something that we'll address on Instagram. But I did just want to, in case anybody was like, these fucking liars. actually, that reminds me, I forgot, there is a piece of negative feedback. It was for one of the shorts I posted of the Prince talking about the Paisley Park episode.
Oh, no.
You know, so the context of the clip was when we were saying that we've always thought, you know, there were all these angry Prince fans. And they were saying, you know, he shouldn't have been in Paisley Park, blah, blah, blah. And we've always thought that Prince probably liked it. And then we basically found out that it is true that Prince liked it. This person responded, liars. He tossed Kim K off stage. And we all know he had no patience for nonsense.
But that was Kim Kardashian. The reason behind that was like he called her up on stage first.
Right. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah,
otherwise, why the fuck was she up there? And then the reason was because he was, first of all, he was kidding. Like, this is Prince's humor. I mean, like, he actually did kick her off stage because that's what made it funny. But, like, she wasn't doing anything. She was, like, barely dancing. And so he kicked her off stage. If Pauly Shore was called on stage, he would have
He's going to dance. He's going to dance.
Prince would never have kicked Pauly Shore off stage.
I know.
In this hypothetical situation.
Just the other day, you sent me, this is a great opportunity to give another shout out to Pauly's dancing. stick to dancing, the Pauly Shore story.
I forgot I said that.
Because you sent me a clip from Jam in the Van where it's when Corey Feldman was on. And Corey Feldman is, of course, he's doing his Michael Jackson moves. And then Pauly's in the back and he's kind of doing his weasel moves, you know?
With like a perfectly straight face the entire time. So he's like,
yeah.
it's just like chaos. And then it cuts off right before the song actually like starts.
And I've seen that. I saw that clip before. And my wife, Kia, was like looking at over my shoulder when I was watching it. And she was like, Pauly always, he always looks like he doesn't quite know what he's doing. Like he's sort of committed, but not fully. And that is like, that's so true. Like his dancing is like, it's like, it's something that's happening to him.
It's not even in the dancing too. I was thinking about this like right before we got on the call too, because I was thinking about when he says wheezing the juice and like the clip that we use in our intro, because I've seen it so many times just because I'll like watch the beginnings of our videos, and he kind of goes like wheezing the juice and he's like looks confused. I wonder if like the weasel is really just like this this being that speaks through him.
It's not, he's just the vessel. And that's why he has kind of an antagonistic relationship, because it's like He doesn't have control over himself when the weasel takes over. I have another theory. This is another thing that we kind of left out because of there being such a gap between us watching the movies and us talking about them. So we talked about how when he shows up in Encino Man, he's singing Lisa Lisa. And we were like, this is weird. Why does this song exist? Why does Pauly Shore's novelty hit song Lisa Lisa, the one I adore, exists in this universe where presumably Pauly Shore doesn't exist, right? I forgot to mention that in Class Act, when he's emceeing in his second outfit, the anti-drug rally, he's like, we couldn't get the strippers, but here we go. 1, 2, 3. And he starts singing Lisa,
yeah,
Lisa.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
So, like, here's the thing. We talk a lot about the Pauly-verse, and I'm wondering if we want to take it to the next level, which is that this is actually a multiverse in which every universe, there is someone who's the weasel. Now, that could be Pauly Shore and he's acting in movies. That's our world. But it could also be Stoney Brown and he just happens to be the weasel of this universe. And then it could be whatever name he had in Class Act, the Stoney from Class Act, who had some name, but I don't remember.
Oh, man.
It was like,
did he have
Stanley?
A name?
Oh, no, it was Stanley in Encino Man. He had a name, but it wasn't Stoney. It's like...
Well, so here's my question. So if there's a weasel in every universe, so Stoney Brown, he's aware of Lisa Lisa. Does that mean that Stoney Brown is just, like, taking style? Like, maybe he's a fan of Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
And so he's listened to Pauly Shore's music. He's a big fan. And so he's a teenager, you know, like when you're a teenager and you kind of like
model yourself
look off of. Yeah. So does that mean that there are actually two Pauly Shores and weasels in that universe?
Well, this is going to get interesting because we haven't posted this episode yet, but when we talked about Son-in-Law, we forgot to mention that Link fucking shows up in it.
Do you remember at the Halloween party? I meant to talk about that. Yes.
Yeah. And so it's like, what the hell? And they kind of act like Krall might have recognized him. So I'm like, is Krall in witness protection? Like, why does he have a whole different backstory?
Or maybe they're two different people. So then that means there are actually three. There are three Pauly Shore weasel characters existing.
What if it's like a cloning experiment? And it's like Orphan Black, but with all Pauly Shores. Okay, so one more thing. I thought this was a correction at first, but then I listened. But it's more like an interesting thing I learned, I guess. So Sean Sheps, we mentioned, was the screenwriter for Encino Man. I happened to look up her IMDb page, and Sean Sheps is a lady, which I thought was interesting. I thought for a minute when I first saw that, I was like, oh, did I say he? I don't actually think I used any kind of pronouns. I think I just said her name. But the reason why I call it out is I just think it's interesting because, you know, she did a lot of like creating Stoney's voice. It was just, like we've said, inserting Pauly Shore's character into the movie. But I think it's kind of an interesting thing where it's like, oh yeah, so there were women involved here too. And I feel like that tends to get erased, right? That tends to get
overlooked. Which honestly doesn't surprise me. And I think that's interesting, like for Wayne's World too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's interesting to think about that this is all media I enjoy, but it's all very like seemingly male centric. But then when you actually look into it, there are women behind the scenes, which is probably the reason why I like these things over other things from the same decade and with kind of the same feel to it.
Right.
Because Pauly Shore's character, it doesn't really surprise me that, did you say it was Encino Man?
Encino Man, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's specifically with Encino Man or, like, throughout his career, but it wouldn't actually surprise me that there are women creatives behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Take from that what you will, but like it kind of makes sense to me. But the same stuff that we've been talking about, where it's like he kind of gets away with certain things, mm-hmm. like I don't know, just like his interactions with women doesn't bother me as much as other people's that may be
right.
in the same right. vein of like weird. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I just thought that was interesting. So shout out to Sean Sheps for breaking the glass ceiling of of caveman teen comedies. This will be quick. In our last episode, we mentioned The Dirt, and specifically we mentioned the Vince Neil chapters of The Dirt, which are up there with the collective works of William Shakespeare as the greatest written texts in Western civilization. So I've got my copy of The Dirt here. It still has all of my flags from when we read it several years ago. And I thought it would be interesting to read the parts where Paulie shows up. What I will say, there's two mentions of him in this chapter. This is chapter nine, Vince's chapter nine. There's two mentions of Paulie Shore in the chapter. And I'll give a warning because the first one's a real bummer. It's actually pretty tragic. So we will talk about this on the show, but in the early 90s, after he got famous, Pauly Shore dated a woman named Shannon Wilsey, who was also known as the porn star Savannah, who, by the way, Vince Neil only refers to by her stage name in this book. So, you know, make of that what you will. They dated kind of on and off for a couple of years in the early 90s. She had drug problems and sort of mental health problems, and got in a car accident in 1994 and ended up taking her life. So I do want to begin on a somber note and just clarify that what is funny about this passage is 100% the framing that Vince decides to give it, not, of course, this woman's horrible, tragic death. So, okay, here we go. I grabbed the first chick I could find, a porn star named Savannah, and took her to Hawaii. She was a gorgeous platinum blonde with soft, perfect curves. Despite the fact that a million guys were jacking off to her movies every day, she was extremely insecure, like a lost little girl. With the band out of my hair, this is after Motley Crue kicks Vince Neil. out of his hair, right? Famously, Vince has gotten rid of the dead weight that was the rest of Motley Crue, and is just on to bigger and better. Although we did talk about how we do kind of like you're invited, but your friend can't come more. So maybe he's
that
right. Maybe Motley Crue was holding him back.
That's completely a matter of preference, though. And I will, like, that's the only song.
Right.
So while I like that song better than a lot of Motley Crue songs, I'm totally aware that is
right.
just me.
And we're not we're not going to bat. Like, I've never listened to the full Exposed album. I'm not going to say that that's better than Girls, Girls, Girls or whatever, you know. But anyway, the band's out of his hair. I couldn't see any reasons to stay sober, so we brought all the pills and coke we could carry with us. After staying up for 4 days straight at the Maui Hilton, Savannah took one pill too many and dropped to the floor convulsing. I called an ambulance and followed her to the hospital. I'd never seen anyone look so beautiful and innocent while lying overdosed in a stretcher. When she returned to the hotel the next day, we picked up right where we had left off and started partying again. But I was older, and for some reason, not only could I not get as fucked up as I used to, but I couldn't recover as quickly. By the time I returned to LA, I was a mess. I flew to the clinic in Tucson again to dry out. Savannah sent me a different porno picture of herself every day until the sober police found my stash and busted me. By the time I completed treatment, she was dating Pauly Shore. So that's where Pauly Shore shows up. But but then he goes on to talk about her death and the way that he, I'm not going to go into it because I don't really want to like seem like I'm making light of this, but the way that he talks about her death. So he says, several years later, she asked me to be her date to the Adult Video News Porno Awards in Las Vegas. I told her I'd go with her, but at the last minute blew her off for another girl. A few days later, they found her dead in her garage. Now, he does go on to say she had a lot of other problems in her life then, and I knew the reason wasn't because I had stood her up, but I felt terrible. So Vince Neil doesn't really think that the reason Shannon Wilsey took her own life is because he stood her up at the AVN Awards, but he comes way too close to saying that for my personal level of comfort. And I just want to say, just hold like this thought.
One of the reasons.
Right. Just hold this thought because this will come up. You know, this is kind of like a turning point in Pauly's career because it happens in 94, right when he starts taking a turn for the worse career-wise. Just like keep this in mind when we talk about how Pauly responds to this horrible death, because it is very different from how Vince Neil does. And that's all. So this is my hot take for the day, is that Pauly Shore is a better person than Vince Neil. I know it's,
I don't know that that's a hot take.
Honestly. I know I'm going on a limb.
as a Vince Neil apologist, even I.
And then this is much more minor, but on the next page. So this is right after he's, there's a part in this chapter, by the way, is fucking like, even if you don't read the dirt, you've got to read the Vince Neil chapters because they are a trip. Like, so within paragraphs,
Kelsey Grammer shows up.
Kelsey Grammer shows up. This, what I'm about to read happens in the same paragraph as Vince Neil sharing a house with Rob Lowe. It's like, it's a fucking cast of thousands. So he says, by then I'd found a manager, Bruce Bird, who put me in the studio with Tommy Shaw and Jack Blades to write a song for the soundtrack to a Pauly Shore vehicle called Encino Man. And now here's what's funny about it. That pretty much blew Nikki and Tommy's theory that I didn't care about music anymore because they hadn't even released a thing yet. I kept that insult in mind when I sued them for 25% of their future profits and $5 million in damages. It was the gentlemanly thing to do, my lawyer said. I just love the thought of Vince Neil being like, oh yeah, you're going to kick me out of Motley Crue? Well, I've got a song on the Encino Man soundtrack.
I know. That's so funny.
All right. So the real reason why we did this, and I think, I don't think this is going to, you know, we're still not, it's not like we're going to spend another hour. The real reason why we did this is we've been talking about Stoney's Encino High Journal. And for a while there, I thought that my only chance of reading it was going to be if I went to the Library of Congress, and which honestly, part of me was hoping would happen because I sort of wanted to film a guerrilla style, you know, totally Pauly style video where I was at the Library of Congress, perhaps as the Weasel, if I could, you know, channel that passenger spirit just for a moment. But it didn't end up having to happen because it's on the Internet Archive. So this is really...
You know what I just thought about? We could still do that. Obviously, this won't happen because we are both lazy. But, like, if we... Because I was thinking, Pauly Shore's energy almost, like, doesn't work for someone who's really tall. Like, it would just be really off-putting. But then I was thinking that, like, you could be Link and I could be Stoney. And we both go to the Library of Congress and demand to see Stoney's
It would be the highlight of the Library of Congress Workers' Week, right? Like, there's no way that that's not the coolest thing that's happened to them. So let me actually, I'm going to share my screen. Yeah. So here's Stoney's Encino High notebook. This has been uploaded on the Internet Archive. We'll post a link. You can only borrow it for an hour at a time.
You won't need
because I guess there's a limited number of digital copies of Stoney's Encino High notebook. but I will say it's renewable based on demand. And I will tell you, I have never not been able to check out Stoney's Encino High notebook. So I think
I checked it out at the beginning of this call because I didn't realize how much other stuff we would have to talk about. And then I realized, oh shit, it's 8:58. Let me go ahead. And so I returned it and then I immediately checked it back out again and we're fine.
Yeah. You'll be fine. Yeah. If you want to read this, you will. There is not, this is not, you know, the newest Outlander book. There is not a demand for this.
It's also 100 pages and takes far less. Most of it is pictures. Yeah. So it takes less than
an hour honestly, through. An hour is a leisurely read of this. But this, I wanted to read this so bad. So I was watching you. Did you see it in the credits also?
I think I noticed it after you mentioned it.
Okay, because I was watching the credits, and I just saw on the credits it said also in stores, Stoney's Encino High notebook now available, blah blah blah, and I was like, excuse me, because you know. I lived through Encino Mania, and I don't remember this at all. It was never at the Scholastic Book Fair or anything like that. And I'm so glad that I can read this and that I didn't have to. Honestly, I might still try to track down a physical copy of it because it just makes me so happy. It is such a like generationally specific, you know, like our generation may be the last to experience movie tie-in, you know, junior novelizations. And I guess they still do that. But I just, you know, I feel like they were big when we were kids. I remember I had one for I had the novelization of the Ninja Turtles movie and also Home Alone 2, which I wish I still had because it is hilarious that Home Alone 2 was turned into a into literature.
It kind of reminds me of this because the Encino High notebook is not a novelization. Like, it's not a novel. Right. It's just like scenes from the movie. But it reminds me of when I was a kid, I had the Monsters, Inc. employee handbook.
Oh, yeah.
And I read that all the time, which is so weird because it's like I never fucking read employee handbooks now that I am an employee. But I read the stupid Monsters, Inc. employee handbook so many times.
Yeah, it's a really cool conceit. So you can see like it's made to look like one of those classic, you know, composition books. And so it has all of the functions of a novelization. It's got a rough outline of the story. And then it has pictures from the movie. You know, that was always a big selling point because back then that was all it took to get people excited was color pictures from the movie. It's so crazy that, you know, now we can just watch movies on our computers. But that was a hot shit. So it has all of the things that you would expect from a junior novelization. But the conceit is that it's an actual notebook. Like, see, here's Stoney's. It's his class notes for natural history. He's got the schedule written here. He's got, you know, Stanley Stoney Brown. And then there's little like marginalia. Here's his notes on the syllabus. I just think it's a cool idea. It's very, the attention to detail is very impressive.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I was a kid, another thing I liked were those Amelia's notebooks where it was literally just like journal style writing and like drawings.
Yeah.
It's like that, but with Encino Man. Like,
you're right. Right.
Specifically around Encino Man.
My critiques, I do have a few. They don't always nail Stoney's dialect. Like, one thing I notice is that they use weasel as a pronoun a lot. Like, as if it's just a generic term for like teen or a cool guy. And I think, as we know, the weasel is very specifically a malevolent spirit that enters Pauly Shore's body and the bodies of Pauly Shore like figures.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think that weasel might actually be a pronoun because I feel like it has been used because now I'm trying to think.
There is that line. I was thinking about this. There is that line where he's like, I'm not a loser, Dave. I'm a unique weasel, you know? So I think that's probably where they're getting it from.
I feel like it's been used outside of Encino Man in a different way. Cause I know I'm like losing it, but I feel like it can be used as a pronoun. And I feel like it should be used as a pronoun.
Are those our pronouns? Yeah, like, because, you know, nowadays you share your pronouns when you meet people. He, him, weasel. I think that's...
/juice.
If that wasn't, like, something that a shitty right-wing person would do to make fun of the concept of pronouns, like, yeah. Are you fucking kidding me?
To be clear, we're
me?
Not making fun
You're
of
not.
The concept of pronouns.
We're fully on board. I'm
100% going to use that.
I have never felt the need before to embrace a non-binary gender identity. This is the first time one has spoken to me. So, and there's parts where sometimes it feels a little more like, so here he says, as if, which sounds like Clueless. I mean, this is before Clueless came out, but it's like treading into generic Valley speak. It doesn't feel authentic to Pauly.
Well, what's interesting about this is the first Pauly Shore thing that, although it's Stoney's journal, but it's not like Pauly Shore sat down and wrote this.
Right, right.
So it's someone mimicking the weasel.
It's a work of fan fiction almost.
Yeah.
So I'm still looking for the thing that I'm trying to think about, but there's a diagrams here of what Dave's pool, what they want Dave's pool to look like. This is another critique I have. Stoney writes, I mean, I understand why this happens because it's based on the movie and Dave is the main character and Stoney is the sidekick. But it's kind of weird when you enter this universe from the perspective of Stoney, because all he ever talks about is Dave. And I'm kind of like, dude, do you not have your own dreams? And, you know, other than being on Jeopardy.
And I feel like he does in the movie. Like,
right. Yeah. I feel like he's more his own person.
Right. There's also in the diagram of the pool, there's like, they want to have like a girl's dressing room with a one-sided mirror, which feels like weirdly rapey for the Encino Man universe.
There's some strange creative choices here, for sure. And sometimes I can't find it. Well, I mean, so here's an example. This is not a great example because I can actually hear this in Pauly's voice, but there are a couple. You know, so sometimes it veers into Valley speak, and sometimes it veers into like Bill and Ted, where it's like, you know, I'm all about the stoner dude spectrum. And one of my favorite things about Bill and Ted specifically is the way that they use like really elevated dialect. You know, they do this a lot, which is kind of like a Shakespearean actor, but then they're saying something that is very dumb. So that's like my favorite thing about Bill and Ted. So sometimes like it says, fully scientific observations of mega excellent archaeological discovery, which I can hear Stoney saying that, but it sounds kind of like we're getting a little into like Most Triumphant. It sounds kind of Bill and Ted to me.
No, I agree with that. And I feel like that wouldn't be like, there's not enough use. And obviously this is like hard to write.
Where are all the hyphens?
He needs a lot of hyphens and a lot of ellipses.
I mean, the conceit of this is like, this is his project, which I think is very funny and very true to the 90s teen movie ethos, that they would find, you know, this is the most monumental scientific discovery of decades. This would be unbelievably, you know, earth shattering. And the most they can think of is, oh, this will make an amazing project for our natural history class. You know, like I love that about it. So yeah, they use the Polaroids.
There's a little bit of retcon with this though, because before I read through the whole book, I remember I was texting you and I was like, it'd be cool if in the movie they had tied in the book by having it so that Dave Wilson or whatever the fuck the bully guy's name is found Stoney's journal. Matt Wilson. Because Dave is the main character, whatever. Yeah.
the other generic white guy.
Who cares? it would have been more interesting if they had Matt Wilson find Stoney's journal in the movie instead of just the Polaroids and then eventually piece it together that Link was a caveman.
Yeah.
They do that in this book. However, there's not the tie-in with the movie. But so they retconned it basically to where instead of the just the photographs, they do like later in the book, Matt Wilson or like somebody writes in it that they found Stoney's journal. And so that's what they use as proof that Link is a caveman.
Yeah. I was trying to get to the part with Matt, but I like this part. There's a whole section that's the Encino High school paper that's all written by Dave's younger sister, like every article, Tina Margo Morgan, TM Morgan. And then, you know, there's the staff and it's just her in every position. We didn't even talk about his sister in our episode because, you know, if you think Dave is a non-entity, like his sister is even more minor, but you know, this is like the level of attention that went into this. You know, they could have just kind of crapped out like a really basic version of the story and, you know, put some pictures in it and like gotten it done. And, you know, they could have knocked that out in a day. I feel like they really kind of went above and beyond, and I'm glad that this is being preserved. They've got the part where they go to the Natural History Museum and Link freaks out because he sees the caveman exhibit. There's some jokes in here. One of them, so this is a fun reminder that this was 1992. There's a Mapplethorpe photography wing that's permanently closed because that was the year that, you know, the Robert Mapplethorpe that whole thing happened.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Oh, I liked this. Stoney's driver's test. Stanley Brown Esquire, again, dipping into Bill and Ted territory, and then address, I can be reached at Dave's house. Oh, and then I caught another Weasel dialect error. So here it says nugs, but we all know that the correct term, the preferred nomenclature is cones. It's not nugs. A nug has cones.
I noticed that when I was reading it like a month ago or whatever too. We looked at this like a while ago, and then I went to Japan. So I haven't thought about this book in a long time.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't feel, you know, I feel like it would be really boring to go all the way through.
It's you have to look at it yourself, but there are a lot of like, I mean, obviously it is what it is. So I understand why it functions this way. But like alongside the thing where like all these fucking pictures and all he talks about are Dave, there's also like photos of Link that were taken when Stoney was not present. So I'm like, how does he have these photos? Who took these photos?
Yeah. I feel like you can really, and this is maybe why you can renew it, because you can really, you know, you can go deep on this if you want to, but it might take you more than an hour. So
there is also like when I was first reading it, I actually forgot that he, for some reason, loves Jeopardy, like canonically. And so I was like, why the fuck is there a letter to Alex Trebek in here?
Yeah. Here's the part that Matt wrote, and they've decided to make him, I guess, illiterate, which is an interesting choice. I mean, I got the impression that, you know, he wasn't the brightest bulb in the box. But this is like when Charlie on It's Always Sunny writes. So yeah, highly recommend Stoney's Encino High Journal. I say that with the caveat that I can't find a copy of it for sale anywhere. So I don't know what exactly. I guess I'm recommending that you go on the Internet Archive and explore it.
I mean, it's super accessible. It's free. Like you can clearly rent it as many times as you need to. Although it'd be crazy if we told everyone about it and then it's like we couldn't get a hold of it because everyone was constantly checking it out.
Well, what if we do that and then, you know, Disney still cares about the Encino Man IP, because I had to take every second of Encino Man footage out of our last episode. So what if they're like watching the Internet Archive and they're like, oh my God, look at this spike in interest. We have to reissue this. We need a 30th anniversary edition.
Let's I could rest easy.
Yeah. If that's what I've accomplished, then I can rest easy. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. I guess I will. There's not much to say, but I also bought the soundtrack. I got it on eBay. I paid like new CD prices, which I mean, it was like $13, but I was just like, you know what? I want this. And this is also what made me bite the bullet by, you know, computers nowadays don't really have CD drives. And so I don't have any way to listen to it. So I bought it. I also bought an external CD DVD drive so I can rip it and put it on my epic computer. So just let the record state that the reason why I have a CD drive is because of the Encino Man soundtrack. Because shockingly, there aren't a lot of torrents of the Encino Man soundtrack.
It actually is pretty shocking because it's a really good soundtrack.
It is. We talked about this a little bit last time, but, you know, obviously the Vince Neil, you know, superior to anything in the Motley Crue catalog. You're invited, but your Frank can't come. There's kind of like a stadium rock, you know, a very 90s, early 90s version of Wild Thing that plays. That's by Cheap Trick. I had no idea. I thought it was just some random band, but it's Cheap Trick. Stone Cold Crazy, version of Mama Said Knock You Out by the group Scatterbrain. You Turn Me On by Crystal Waters, which I think is the song that's playing in the club where Link is dancing. Obviously, Feed the Monkey by Infectious Grooves. Frankenstein. I mean, you can't have enough albums with Frankenstein on them.
Did they put the PM Dawn song on there?
Does it? No, I don't think so. Oh. But you know what it does have, though, is it has a Steve Vai song and Leave My Curl Alone by High C.
Yeah, yes. I was going to mention that I didn't notice until this last watch that is in there. The song that's an ode to Jerry Curls is in there.
So I love it when our interests all coalesce, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's it. We managed to talk for an hour.
Yeah, I noticed
that. Our next episode is going to be pretty long. We went a long time on Son-in-Law because we were fresh. Like Son-in-Law, I recorded that episode the same day I watched it. You know, Encino Man and Class Act, I recorded it like 2 weeks later, so I could barely remember the movies. Son-in-Law, it was like fresh in my mind. So so get ready for a deep dive into Son-in-Law in 2 weeks. In the meantime, please reach out to us so we can read some more comments. You can find us on Instagram at Dystopian Graham. You can find us on YouTube at Dystopian Dance Party. You can find us on the web at dystopiandanceparty.com. You can email us at our bespoke email address that still hasn't received any correspondence. It's heybuddy@dystopiandanceparty.com. And then I'm going to put out a special pitch or a special request. And I'm going to say this again in the future because this is probably not going to get as many views as our other episodes. But I'm going to put out a request to please review Year of the Weasel on your platform of choice. Because when I search for Year of the Weasel on Apple, this like Chris Titus, the comedian Chris Titus podcast episode from a couple years ago called Year of the Weasel comes up. And I realized that he did it first and he's way more famous than us. But whatever he's talking about, this is the Year of the Weasel now. So we need to displace him.
What if he was talking... with the old. What if he did watch all of Pauly Shore's catalog and he just was very succinct about it? What is going to take us a year and many, many episodes only took him one episode?
Then it should have been Day of the Weasel or Hour of the Weasel. Then. We're actually committing to this for a year. All right. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks.